Means Committee and for March 29th, 2017. And we get to have a public hearing today on House Bill 5010, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I believe we have public testimony. So we're going to, I'm going to ask, if we got, I've got a long list.
At least two.
Okay. So I think what we'll do is we'll do two at a time and bring some folks up. And I think we'll recognize a few of these folks.
We have some folks in 170, so if you could do on deck.
Oh, there are folks in 170 as well. Okay, hello everybody in 170.
Feeling better?
Let me start off with Jerome and the hat, which I already talked about before. Elkins, thank you.
And I do promise you, Senator, to get you a hat if you.
I've got one.
I'm getting to wear it.
I will get one as soon as I possibly can. I found some the other day that just happened to fit, which was nice for a change. And
well, we got to make sure it's a good one.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Frederick, members of the committee. My name is Jerome Rosa, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Oregon Cattlemen's Association is the voice of the cattle industry in Oregon. We represent over 2,000 ranchers in Oregon and aim to grow Oregon's beef industry and promote economically and socially sound economic practices in producing beef products sold worldwide. Oregon has over 13,000 ranchers throughout the state using 57% of the state's agricultural lands and comprising 14% of Oregon's total agricultural sector, and is Oregon's largest agricultural industry for the last 3 years. We work closely with the Department of Fish and Wildlife on a variety of issues. Livestock producers are uniquely dependent on the effectiveness and the efficiency of ODFW as our producers provide land, feed, and water for Oregon's diverse wildlife population. Our cooperation, collaboration, and commitment to conservation is often overlooked by the public. But the staff of ODFW is keenly aware of ranchers' work on the ground. With this relationship in mind, we recognize ODFW staff, its great work and continued relationship. Secondly, we want to highlight several areas of interest and concern for our industry as examples of work and collaboration and dependence on ODFW. OCA is an industry leader in the continued diligent dialogue over livestock wolf conflict, wolf management, and predator control. Russ Morgan and his team have done an excellent job in the past year of reviewing Oregon's wolf conservation and management plan, and we look forward to our continued work together. In another example of collaboration, OCA has been intimately involved in the comprehensive All Lands, All Threats plan to conserve sage-grouse and promote rangeland health and economic development vital to the future of rural eastern Oregon economies. On that note, we request approval of management and of the state's sage-grouse mitigation program and the agency's request for $425,000. We also highlight our outstanding Oregon wildlife populations. Whether it's losing alfalfa to mule deer, hay to elk, or calves and sheep to wolf and cougars, livestock producers interact with wildlife and face challenges and losses every day throughout the state. As we request to this committee in regards to Oregon's Department of Ag budget, we simply ask that Oregonians continue to support us in interaction with wildlife creates challenges for our operations. Our coalition respectfully asks the committee to restore $470,000 to the Wildlife Service Predator Control Program and the ODFW budget. Finally, given the harsh weather this winter, ranchers have had particular challenges with mule deer and elk. As we've shared with this committee before, we are hearing stories of ranchers allowing starving deer and starving elk to feed on haystacks in pastures and access other food, costing the producers with no ability to recoup this cost, simply out of their commitment to Oregon wildlife. We urge the committee and the department to redirect staff where necessary to allow for management of elk and deer, particularly in eastern Oregon. This will save ranchers from a continued loss. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. We do have about 26 people scheduled to speak, so if you can manage to get folks, if you have something to say, if you can say it quickly, that'd be even better. Okay. Thank you.
And yes. With that, I start.
Yes.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. I've been before the committees in Ways and Means over the last decade or so, talking to you about the Wildlife Department of Fish and Wildlife budget, our support for it. And our priority has been over those years and still is to keep biologists and game enforcement officers in the field. And we ask you once again to keep that in mind with this budget. We're also looking at restoring funding to the Wildlife Services budget that was spoken before. Some species of wildlife have negative influence on other wildlife, and this service is good for for hunting and for agricultural interests. We are, for the first time, OHA is going to be presenting a budget note to the ODFW budget. We are asking for a look at poaching in Oregon. This is not a study to be done, but a strategy. We're not asking for any money, just to get a group of folks done to get the job done. To get a group of folks together to get the job done. What we're looking for is the creation of a statewide anti-poaching campaign to encourage the public to report poaching violations. And we will be presenting that. We're working with Representative Witt's office and LFO to get that drafted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any idea on time frame when you'll have that together?
Hopefully we'll get it done by mid next week.
Good deal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Curious to see it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Two of you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to commend Al and the Oregon Hunters Association for doing that. This is, poaching is a horrendous problem in the state, and the hunters have been concerned about it for a long time, and I'm glad that they are asking us to partner with them in some measure to do something a little bit outside the box to get at the problem beyond what we can do in funding our OSP officers. Just wanted to commend it for that.
And now we have Stephen Cafori and John Goodell. Good to see you.
Thank you. Congratulations on becoming a senator.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chairs, my name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here this afternoon representing the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society. The Wildlife Society is a national organization of wildlife biologists, and we come to the legislature with the goal of bringing science and science-based management, promoting those two goals. We don't get involved very much in interest in bills. We don't get very much in promoting one side or the other, but we do have a very wide background of members from academia, from state and federal agencies, from private consultants, people who work for large corporations. So we have a broad spectrum of backgrounds, but the one thing we do have in common is that we see the need for bringing science to natural resource decisions. So John Goodell is one of our members on our board and wants to talk to you about some issues that we are concerned having to do with scientific management.
Good afternoon. Oregon Chapter Wildlife Society would like to express our strong support for...
Excuse me, before you begin, would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, my name is John Goodell. I'm the Vice President of the Oregon Chapter of the Wildlife Society.
Thank you.
We would like to express our strong support for full funding of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's policy option packages, number 145 and 144. These are the Oregon Conservation Strategy Implementation and the California Condor Conservation and Management, and we recognize that these are not included in the current budget, but we consider their inclusion critical to fulfilling ODFW's conservation objectives, which are laid forth in the conservation strategy. As you may know, the funding task force, the Task Force on Funding for Fish, Wildlife, and Related Outdoor Recreation Education, which was HB 2402, developed a funding proposal to address some systemic issues related to revenue sources for fish and wildlife management in Oregon. While these funding solutions seek to address current ODFW obligations, they're also intended to fund the conservation strategy, this an overarching vision guiding resource management in areas beyond sport and game management, sport fishing game management. The Oregon Conservation Strategy was developed by a partnership of numerous agencies, conservation groups, and industry stakeholders, and represents a collaborative and proactive strategy for maintaining and restoring Oregon's fish, wildlife, and their habitats. So in a nutshell, these two packages it really offer an interim support for what we expect will be unlikely or at least delayed possibly funding of the conservation strategy. Currently, the bill HB 3270 has been introduced, which seeks to put forward the task force funding proposals toward legislation. However, we hope that these two policy option packages can be supported by the Ways and Means Committee, and in hopes that they will provide some interim support in the advent that we do not have a funding solution for fish and wildlife conservation in Oregon in the near term. So I'd just like to thank you for your consideration of these matters, and please feel free to contact TWS if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Any comments? No? Thank you very much. I appreciate that. If we could have Tom Wolf and Tom McDonald come forward, please. Is Tom McDonald here? If Tom McDonald's in the other room, you should come this way. I think you can start off, and we'll see if he shows up.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, here with Trout Unlimited. You have my electronic copy, so I will skip that really magnificent testimony and be brief in what I'm doing. I just want to talk quickly. Trout Unlimited supports POP 104, which would add staff for the recovery of anadromous fish in the Klamath, and Trout Unlimited also supports POP 108, which provides funding for water in-stream water flow staff, which we both consider those very important, and we ask that that money be protected and included in the budget. As far as cuts, I'm going to just make the general suggestion that ODFW look at consolidating hatcheries and perhaps cutting staff and cutting operations that way. Lastly, restoration, and this is the most important part. There's something called the Western Streams Restoration Program, which in the last session I kept in the budget, myself and others kept in the budget, although they took a cut. I'd like to ask that be, it didn't make the co-chair, the Ways and Means co-chair's 15% cut. And I would like to ask that be re-included in the ODFW budget. It provides an extremely valuable function for watershed councils. It provides money for staffing for ODFW to design projects for the watershed councils. And as my two compadres from two watershed councils on the coast will go into that in more detail, but it's an important part of the Oregon Salmon Plan and the plan to recover salmon in Western Oregon, so I consider it of great function and ask that be included. So before I want to conclude, I just want to mention real quickly that in the 25 years that I've been working on these issues, this is the 1,000th time that I've testified. I was going to do a dance for you, but in because of brevity and because it's too much of a spectacle to do in public, and there's got to be a lot more alcohol involved, I won't do that, but I just want to say that I couldn't think of a better committee to testify 1,000 times in front of. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I didn't need that image.
He needs a poll.
Tom McDonald, go ahead.
Yes, Tom McDonald, owner of Desert Springs Trout Farm. There's several issues I'd like to talk to you about real quick. The first one is about the ODF and contract that we had dated February 10th for $164,000. They said, first they said that we needed a bond, and then they said they didn't have the money. The trout purchases is priority 5 of 50 in ODF&W's 2018-19 budget. The bonding cost about $4,000. We carry insurance on our equipment and vehicles for $1 million plus a $4 million blanket. And these fish are ours until we deliver them into the system, and then they become ODF&Ws. This bond is just a huge thing to put on top of us, and it takes money away from the fishing. I've got copies over there, and it's got all the stuff in it. With California's Department of Fish and Game, we have a contract with them for $83,000. There's no signatures. There's nothing. And that's how we deal with California, but with Oregon Department of Fish and Game, it is just out of control on that. And on their 140 priority here for the Clackamas Hatchery, they stated in there about our fish being too expensive. And they took part of our contract for the out of there for the Willamette District, where we deliver 100 to 200 pounds, and that's what they use to get their $4.95. And we would put our fish up against this $2.30 cost that they're talking about of the hatchery anytime. Our hatchery is the only clean water hatchery in the state of Oregon. You'll see in some of the charts in there, they have the diseases that ODF&W has. We've had a clean bill of health since 1989 and never a disease. Our water is artesian, comes out of the ground clean. We have nothing in it, and we've never had a problem with it. And there's quite a bit of other stuff here, but I know you're short on time, but it all is self-explanatory. And we used ODF&W's propagation report for the information that we give you out of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, you said that there was a claim by the department that your fish were too expensive, but I understand that they tried to, or did in fact, contract with you and then froze your contract.
That's exactly right. And then they said if you made the deliveries in 2018, if they did proceed with it and didn't have a problem, then you wouldn't have to get the bonding for 2018, 2019. Well, the thing about it is we carry an ungodly amount of insurance, and all the responsibility is on our shoulders on this thing. And it's just another way to cause a big expense. And I called Patty Whalen up, and I said, Patty, what's the bond for? She said, well, if you have a wreck and we have to clean the fish up. I said, I have all the insurance for that. When Lindsey Ball was director, I said, what's the bond for? He said, well, if you don't deliver the fish, then we've got a recourse back. I don't get any money at all until 30 days after the fish are put stocked, and I have to buy the egg 16 months in advance, pay all my people, raise the fish up, and then deliver them. And they have no liability. They're not around any of my equipment when we deliver or anything, and it's just putting a huge burden back on us. It's just crazy to have to pay for a $166,000 bond when I have a $4 million blanket on my company.
So you just explained part of what it takes to raise fish. Could you explain to us, please, how a business person plans to operate a business after you make a contract? You've got all of the capital outlay and the eggs, the fish raising, the labor, the food, the water, I don't know what all else. How do you run a business when you get a contract and then it's frozen?
Well, it's about impossible to do that when you have to do so much in advance. At least 12 to 14 months in advance, we have to have the fish in the system. And when they come up and freeze a contract, you know, that's what it is. And we really feel that the problem with this contract is this U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on closing Leeburg Hatchery. That contract is coming out next month. There's going to be two bidders on the contract, ODF&W and Desert Springs Trout Farm.
Thank you. And Tom Wolf, Tom, you mentioned you possibly had a recommendation for saving money by consolidating hatcheries. Could you maybe prepare something, a quick list for the subcommittee here with your recommendations?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I'd be happy to, and I'll get that to you as soon as I can.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Esquivel had a question. Hold on a second,
Chair,
folks.
on the bond, is it just a performance bond?
It's a performance bond.
Okay, now my next question is, have you ever not delivered?
No, no, not on any of our contracts.
So let me get this straight, that you prepare the fish, you get them ready, and when you deliver the fish is the only time that ODF&W has any possession of that fish.
Absolutely.
So in other words, it's all up to you to that point.
That's so, right. And if I don't deliver, if I didn't, but I never have, ODF&W is still not out any money.
Well, yeah, they aren't out any money until until you drop them in the water.
Until we drop them in the water, yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I followed that. Not.
And you can see in those, on the diseases in there that they had in the last few years, we have never had anything. And some of those diseases in there, you need to kill the fish with IHN and BKD, and I couldn't find anywhere in there that they killed these fish with these diseases.
Thank you. Did you have something?
You got a lot of people to go through.
I do. We have quite a few to go through. Thank you very much. I think we're going to be looking at this. Thank you for this packet of information.
I appreciate it.
Very helpful.
Thank you.
We have next Robert Russell and Melissa Graper. Thank you. Before you, if Joel Fisher and John Ardley are not in the room, then they should be. They'll be coming up next. Thank you very much.
All right. My name is Rob Russell with the Tillamook Bay Watershed Council, and I really appreciate the opportunity to testify on the ODFW budget. You're all familiar with watershed councils and the fact that we're responsible for on-the-ground implementation of the state's habitat restoration strategy. And I think you all know how well the Watershed Council has been working and continues to work. It's been an incredible success for Oregon. We've restored hundreds of miles of habitat, and it's all based on local partnerships, which, I think most Oregonians would be amazed if they got in the ring with all of that. It's just a really amazing thing, and I'm really happy to be a part of it. And it's an incredible multiplier effect, as I'm sure you know. You know, we fund councils at $55,000 per year, and that turns into a board of directors of, from 10 to 15 people, local citizens who are volunteering their time for all these incredible projects, huge partnerships. It's an amazing thing, and there are two programs on the ODFW cut list that are really important to the work. As Tom Wolf mentioned earlier, the Western Stream Restoration Program, that puts habitat restoration biologists on the ground in the community to help us develop projects. Absolutely critical. Our local habitat biologist, Troy Laws, in just 1 year was responsible for 11 miles of restored stream and the replacement of 4 fish passage barriers. That's just 1 year. And we've been doing this for 20 years, and we hope to be doing this for a lot more years. So that I just want to put some real on-the-ground value to these positions. So Western Stream Restoration Program is on the 15% cut list, and we'd really like to see that restored. Another program that's really important is the Life Cycle Monitoring Program, which has been kind of dying a slow death of 1,000 cuts, but it's absolutely critical to our monitoring of the work that we do. And I found it strange. I'm a little bit new to this whole program, so my understanding may be a little shallow, but if I understand correctly, it was listed as number 10 on the priority list for ODFW, but it somehow made the 10% cut list. So I would just ask that you would all maybe take another look at that and see whether there's a way that we can bring that back into the budget. It's really low. It's a low dollar amount relative to the benefit for $381,557 per biennium. And they're producing a ton of data and services, including adult and juvenile population estimates, freshwater and marine survival estimates, and stray rates of hatchery fish. All of these are incredibly important for monitoring our success in trying to restore coho salmon populations, which is what this whole effort is about. So I just ask humbly that you consider bringing these back into the ODFW budget, and thank you.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty, yes. I'm up. Good afternoon, co-chairs Frederick and Witt, and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Graper. I am the Watershed Council Coordinator for the Neconicum Watershed Council, located in Seaside. And I spoke about this, like Rob had said, last year or 2 years ago, the potential cut of the Western Oregon Stream Restoration Program. And I'm just one of, or we're two of, more than 30 watershed councils affected by the potential loss of this program and the profound repercussions that it will have on habitat restoration efforts in Western Oregon. The program provides direct technical support to our watershed councils and private landowners in implementing the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watershed Councils, and it measures, and the measures directing the restoration enhancement of salmon populations in our region. This includes increasing in-stream habitat complexity by adding large wood and boulders, enhancing riparian areas, and correcting our fish passage problems. Two years ago, the program was eliminated from 7 biologists and a bunch of monitoring staff to 3 biologists, one for the North Coast, one for the Rogue area, and one for the Umpqua. And we just were concerned that an elimination of this program in ODFNW was catastrophic, but the reduction wouldn't we've been able to live with. Like I said, more than 30 watershed councils out of the 60 recognized in by OWEB in at least 18 counties across the state. So it's a very important program for us to be able to leverage the funds that we're able to do, the technical assistance that this program provides. The department had been in conversations with them 2 years ago. This program is eliminated. There are still organizations like mine and others that do this work, but we can't do the work without that technical assistance we get from the department. So we just urge you to help us try and keep that program at least partially funded. So that's all I've got.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Any questions? No? Thank you again.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, yes.
I just want to thank all the folks that are involved in the Watershed Councils and the SWCDs for all of the tremendous work that they put in for the benefit of all Oregonians and all of Oregon's natural habitat. Thank you very, very much.
Absolutely a pleasure. Thank you.
Let's see. We've got John Ardley and Joel Fisher. And on deck will be Peggy Lynch and Bobby Cochran.
Chair Frederick, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joel Fisher, representing Oregon Business Association and Associated Oregon Industries. Two separate business associations. We're currently in the process of merging. And for this session, we are singing the same song with one legislative agenda. And so I'm here representing both. Together, we represent about 1,800 businesses, both large and small, in all parts of Oregon. Here to talk about the importance and economic development opportunities around sage-grouse. I had the opportunity to travel the state in 2014, leading up to the 2015 session. We went to 11 different communities in Oregon, and what we heard, particularly on the east side, was the importance of protecting sage-grouse so that we can protect rural jobs. So there are a lot of opportunities here around maintaining, sustaining, and expanding jobs in rural communities, in traditional sectors like ranching and farming, and in new sectors like energy development. So all three business associations here urging your support for a sage-grouse mitigation program, sage-grouse mitigation coordinator in POP 110, and the sage-grouse mitigation program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is John Audley. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Business Council. My role for OBC is to strengthen the connection between our work and the work of the statewide business associations, with priorities set and advocated by our rural business leaders. As evidence of this work, last year's summit hosted 7 issues, more than half of the issues that we covered in the afternoon breakout sessions. Were set and defined by our rural business friends. For many years, OBC has made the health of Oregon's high desert a priority issue. Just 2 years ago, we invited John O'Keefe to join us at the summit to emphasize the fact that good conservation and healthy rural economies go hand in glove. We've been strong advocates in promoting the multiple values of Western juniper management, both for conservation and for employment. We believe strongly that Oregon's working landscapes
play an indispensable role in our efforts to achieve our state's conservation objectives while maintaining healthy rural economies that contribute to Oregon's overall economy. With so much focus on the explosive growth of our urban areas, it may be hard for some of us to fully appreciate the value of Oregon's agricultural economy to our overall health. It's the second largest source of economic activity in the state, and most of it takes place on Oregon's east side. Good conservation and strong economies work together, which is why I'm proud to be here to support ODFW's work in the high desert. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No? Thank you very much. Peggy Lynch and Bobby Cochran, and then Kathy McDonald and Bob Reese are on deck.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs Peggy Lynch and members of the committee. Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. You have my testimony on OLIS, so I promise not to read it all. But I do want to point out that we support the mission of this department to protect and enhance Oregon's fish and wildlife and their habitats for use and enjoyment by present and future generations. And yesterday's big number of children that were at the Capitol should remind us all why we actually do this, why you're here as elected officials and by those of us on the other side who talk to you all the time about what we should be doing for Oregonians. We need not forget them. The League has been very active in water issues, and we support the agency in working to assure we have abundant clean water for all. ODFW must be funded not only with extractive fees and licenses, but by monies provided by the general public. And that's the big message that the League would like to bring to you. We worked very hard on House Bill 2402 to try to find a funding solution. First of all, to discuss the issue around licenses and fees, and we're pleased to see the stats that mean that we actually did see an increase in those this last session. We think that perhaps the fact that we had a year-long discussion about those fees might actually have helped the general public understand the role of this important agency. So I think that may be in part why we actually saw some increase in those. We need more revenue. You have heard me say that with every natural resource agency budget, and you will hear me say that again. We do support fully funding POP 108, not just partial funding, but full funding of POP 108 to continue the implementation of the Integrated Water Resources Strategy. This is an area I have talked about before. We link this POP with the programs you will hear in the Water Resources Department's budget. Again, the work of these agencies have interrelated duties and should not be viewed in silos. And this is important to actually get the work done at the Water Resources Department and some of their programs. I want to give you a funding option. The task force provided you with a sort of an option for funding, but we simply have said that a 5% charge at the distributor level of sales on beverages sold under the bottle bill would provide dollars that could be used for all our natural resource agencies to begin to adequately fund these agencies on behalf of all Oregonians. So not just for this agency, but it would actually double the dollars that are currently the $405 million that you have allocated for all 14 agencies. So I encourage you to take a look at that and to consider that. I also want to say that we supported House Bill 3315, which was the bill that asked the agency to do some staff management, time management, to learn what their people do on behalf of other agencies. And we're thrilled by what's happening. We're really excited to hear the six-month report that they're going to be providing here in the near future that would allow them to bill but not collect from the other state agencies on behalf of permits that they do for others. This will be an issue that this legislature is going to have to deal with. Are we going to just take from one agency and have another agency pay for it? Are we going to have the permittees do it? Are we going to have to find enough money in Oregon so that we pay for the services that Oregonians need? To be clear, we support ODFW scientists and their jobs to assure that our fish and wildlife are protected for future generations. We believe ODFW scientists have a very important role in assuring abundant clean water for all. And we believe that fishers and hunters have a role in funding this agency, but the general fund, the people's money, should also contribute. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Bobby Cochran, executive director for Willamette Partnership. We're a conservation organization whose mission is really to solve complex environmental problems in ways that also work for people. And I'm here in support of ODFW's POP 110 and the mitigation coordinator in particular around sage grouse. And the reason why we're in such support of that, if you look at Oregon sage grouse plan, it's being looked to as a model of kind of incentive, market-based approaches, and a state-led strategy that governors in Idaho and Montana are also looking to for inspiration. And part of what that hinges on is a more programmatic, consistent, predictable approach to mitigation that's going to allow for a faster path towards renewable energy development and other job creation activities in eastern Oregon. And so for that reason, it's really important to us that the mitigation coordinator and POP 110 get funded. And I think there's not other partners and not other sources of money that can pay for that work. So it's really important. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes.
Just a comment. Powell. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could, I would. I understand that we're going to have more testimony from the department tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yes, right.
This is an area that I would like an update from the department on. It strikes me as I don't understand how we stand up a new program as vital as the partnership on sage grouse, and then we pull a critical staff position out of the budget. I just don't get it. And so I know that's not the
question.
It's not the department that's doing it. It's the governor's budget. So I'd like an update on how the program is going, how the mitigation is working, and what they think the impact of the governor's budget on that program would be.
Thank you very much. Yes,
I would also like maybe the department to come in and tell us. I mean, we have all these pieces out here of the sage grouse.
Right.
BLM's working on it. Forest Service working on it. Division of State Lands working on it. I mean, everyone's working on this. I want to kind of understand where does this all come together and how much are we talking about and how are we gaining on this? Because we're losing 150,000 acres a year in just juniper alone. So I'd like to know how we're targeting this and what's the real plan?
Very good question. Thank you very much. We'll see if I'm sure that department will be, I hope they'll be coming back to talk at least a little bit about that tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you very much. Kathy McDonald and Bob Reese. And I think Bob Reese, unless he has a twin, wrote it down twice. Is that right?
Yeah, you can cross one of those.
Okay. Just wondering. Thank you. Yes, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt. It's great to be able to talk to you today in support of ODFW's budget. My name is Catherine McDonald. I'm the Director of Policy and External Affairs for the Nature Conservancy in Oregon. And we work with the department across the state on a wide range of fish and wildlife issues that are really important. I want to talk to you about just two critical issues that we are really want to emphasize as being important in ODFW's budget. First, to echo what Bobby Cochran just talked about, the sage grouse funding, POP 110, it is a really critical position. We just got that started 2 years ago, and it's really essential that we keep that moving. It's an important position from a conservation perspective, but also really important position from a rural economic development perspective. And when all of the parties to the SageCon partnership worked together, I think we all grew to be very committed to both sides of that coin. And so we want to be here to really support that position because we know that it positions the department to be really helpful to the counties affected by the sage grouse and to developers to get through a process in a more efficient, effective way. Second, I wanted to just bring your attention and thank all of you for supporting funding for marine reserves over the years. And I just hope that you, as you work on the budget, that you take care to protect the important funding for the marine reserve monitoring. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Reese.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Bob Reese. I'm Executive Director for the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. In the crowd is President Bill Kremers. We are headquartered in Milwaukee, Oregon, representing 11 chapters and 1,700 members, mostly up and down the Willamette Valley. I wanted to point out, first of all, I was present for part of the presentation on Monday. Director Melcher quantified 88% of all Oregonians believe this is a credible agency, which is positive numbers for all of us. Of course, all Oregonians have a deep love for this agency and its mission. That survey, however, clearly was not encompassing a whole slew of hunters and fishers that do hold some angst towards particularly the commission. And it is challenging to differentiate the actions of the commission aside of the good work that the agency does and its personnel. We do believe that they are doing a great job. So there is this growing sentiment amongst our community that the agency's largest customer base is not getting what it's paying for. And I believe that that poll did not represent that community of people. If you did just poll anglers, particularly Columbia River anglers, you would have a much, much different statistical outcome. I present a fraction of this evidence with this stack of 6,000 signatures that we gathered in about 10 days' time that talks about the need to fully implement Senate Bill 830, which is the Columbia River Reform Package, as well as the removal of Commissioner Buckmaster, a former Gillnet lobbyist from the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission. Again, there's 9,845 Columbia River endorsement license holders. We feel that they're are not being adequately represented on this commission. Speaking of taxation without representation, despite a $221,000 sport fishing funded Columbia River endorsement fees going to the production of off-channel salmon, particularly in Young's Bay, this Fish and Wildlife Commission continues to deny the sport fleet access at the most opportune location to intercept these fish, which by law we are required to keep off of the wild spawning grounds. The Young's Bay bubble closure remains in effect for 45 days during the peak season. We remain committed to the full implementation of Senate Bill 830, including the assurance that the gillnet fleet meets their economic objectives. To do that, we'll have to continue to fund smolt prediction in those off-channel areas, which we do fully support. Despite the glaring disrespect that the Fish and Wildlife Commission shows for the contribution of our community, we still support a robust budget for this agency. We found it particularly ironic that on the same day the commission slashed opportunity for the sport fishing community, 31 of our volunteer members of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders were shepherding 57 adults and 73 children through our second annual family fish camp at Camp Angelos. We're making the next generation of agency funders while this commission is cutting them out of our hide. Now, to the meat of this conversation, we do have specific concerns about cuts to the nearshore research, and we do support policy option packages 123 and 125, which is the nearshore research as well as an investment in understanding ocean acidification. We do support policy option package 140. We ask that the legislature avoid cuts to hatchery production and staff due to their rural economic contributions and to the fishing opportunities for the public. We do support policy option package 141, as we're seeing increased amounts of pinniped predation take place at Willamette Falls, which has severely curtailed the economic activity in that area, as well as pinniped predation we're now witnessing up the Clackamas and Sandy Rivers, which we have historically not seen. It is again the result of a food base that is non-existent or lacking for these pinnipeds. They're taking advantage of areas that they historically have not, and it's only going to get worse if we don't address the problem. Fish recovery program staffing and fish screen technicians are important functions that should be retained, and we should try to continue most or all of the work that's done through the Western Streams restoration effort. I'm a former chair of the Tillamook Bay Watershed Council and deeply believe in the work that those folks are doing on a volunteer basis. I'd just like to close my testimony by stating that I developed a white paper when Oregon Department of Forestry was going through the same question about alternative funding for their agency. Through my calculations, I've discovered that we as sport anglers, on average, expend less than 2% of our money towards license and tag fees. So a very small percent of what we spend on an annual basis goes towards our licenses and tags. We're getting great value from what the department produces, but there are several occasions and policies that are adopted through the commission that we don't believe we're getting what we're paying for. And I just want to make that clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Can I make one quick comment?
Yes.
Apologies. Please. I just wanted to
introduce yourself.
This is Kathy McDonald, the Director of External Affairs for the Nature Conservancy. We have a fact sheet that a number of different organizations have signed on to that explain all of the elements for sage-grouse funding. So it might be a place to start to kind of see what this broad group of people feels is really important in the current budgets for ODFW, ODF, ODA, and the Oregon Census Program, because they're all very important elements of implementing the action plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Representative.
Bob, I know you're a guide, and I know that some of the rulings directly affected the guides. Could you kind of elaborate on how this affected your net income by not being able to fish certain days on the river?
Co-chairs Frederick and Witt, Senator Girard, thank you. I am no longer a full-time fishing guide. I had to move away from Tillamook, my home of 20 years, to come to the city to get another job. And it really is our fault for not addressing this, but the guide community are actually on paper larger contributors to rural economies than the commercial gillnet fleet of the Lower Columbia River. That's fact, and I'm happy to get you those facts to you if you're interested in them. So and the Young's Bay closure falls into this same category. We were developing the fishery at the mouth of at Young's Bay, producing great catches in early August. That went away, and so did our business to the town of Astoria. And so by not fully implementing these plans, it is extremely more challenging to craft a business plan that brings a lot of people, not just from out of state, but also from urban areas to those rural areas to participate in those fisheries. If and when we get to full implementation of Senate Bill 830, we'll be able to better plan our businesses, we'll have more opportunity, we'll be able to market that opportunity. And as you saw by Director Melcher's presentation on Monday, there was a bump in license revenues, which is great. That's super. A lot of it has to do with the Alaska fisheries going down, and not just Oregonians, but other people from across the nation understanding that we're having fantastic fish runs in Oregon, and they're not spending the money to go to Alaska. They're spending it here in Oregon. We want to continue that tradition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you follow? Thank you very much. I appreciate that. If Jenny Dressler and Michael Salvaggio can, I don't see either one of them in here. That's odd. I didn't give a.
In the next room?
Are the two of them in the next room?
Here they come.
Here comes Michael. And Jenny? There she is. And I have Dominique Aiello and Dave Wiley scheduled for the next.
I'll kick it off. Okay. Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. We represent about 65,000 members statewide. 7,000 of those are active farm and ranch families. Today we are here. We will be brief. Our comments are in the record. But to support predator control, APHIS Wildlife Services funding, I am sure that many of you are aware, as this came up in the Department of Ag budget, but we saw in the governor's recommended budget both of the money in the Department of Ag's budget and Fish and Wildlife zeroed out in that program. It provides an enormous benefit to counties. I think that I do believe that this committee in 2015 worked on a proposal to help counties even self-fund their portion of that match. So a very big program for our members, and we would appreciate seeing some dollars restored to that program so that it can go forward in those communities. Wolf management, you heard from the cattlemen, we would echo their comments there. I won't belabor the fact, but we would like to see those program or those one of those positions restored back to the program, and even additional support to continue the collaring and helping provide accurate counts and ensuring that the state is meeting its obligations to landowners. Sage grouse, you've also heard an enormous amount of testimony on that. We would echo that and urge that this committee and that the legislature as a whole continue the 2015 to 2017 level funding for the sage grouse programs, including policy option package 142 and the unfunded mitigation position within the ODF&W budget. Our last point of interest is around a program that we've been concerned about, and that is state acquisition of farmlands. You hear us testify on this quite a bit. As a policy matter, the Oregon Farm Bureau believe that Oregon should be moving away from acquiring working lands as a primary means of achieving conservation and recreation benefits. We're a part of the Oregon Ag Heritage Program because we see that as a positive step forward, but one that doesn't take lands out of production. And as a practical matter, our members are concerned that the state doesn't have the resources on hand to manage some of those lands that are adjacent to farmland, and we see some pressures because of that. So in this current budget, policy option package 112 and policy option package 119 both could allow for new acquisitions of farmland, and we would respectfully ask that the committee limit the ability for those funds to be spent on the acquisition of farmlands. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Take a breath now, Jenny.
I know. Sorry.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Silvaggio. I'm here representing the Audubon Society of Portland and also Central Oregon Land Watch, two organizations with very, very similar concerns about this budget. And I'll just keep my comments as brief as possible. But generally speaking, we have deep concerns regarding ongoing cuts to ODF&W, in particular cuts to the ability to protect and manage non-game species, which make up 88% of the state's wildlife, but only 2% of the ODF&W budget. As the department's already sustained significant cuts, imperiled species move closer to the brink of being listed under the Endangered Species Act, and I think that there's a lot of agreement there that it's over the long run and even over the short run much less expensive to manage a healthy species than to try and recover after they're listed or even if they're being close to listed. So that brings me to my first quick point. We very, very strongly support the efforts to protect and restore the sage grouse population. I won't be belabor those points, but in 2015, the U.S. Department of the Interior decision to not list was based in large part on a commitment of Oregon to take protective actions, and we would not want failure to follow through on that to lead to a renewed effort to list. We also support the governor's request for another $650,000 for fire protection associations. That's endorsed by a wide range of groups here. Very briefly, there are certain cuts that I want to specifically point out our opposition to, reducing the Oregon Conservation Strategy Program, which allows conservation strategies to actually be implemented by staff, cuts to the statewide policy and coordination, cuts to the Endangered Species Act and scientific take permitting, cuts to the Wildlife Division's volunteer program, cuts to nearshore and estuary management, but I also want to put on record specifically for both organizations that I'm up here for that we do, in fact, support the cuts to predator control. We feel that the program that is designed to kill native species has a history of also taking inadvertently non-target species, and that's aside from our concerns about what we see as generally inhumane and unscientific methods. So because we feel that it's anachronistic and ultimately destructive, we're fully in support of the cuts outlined in that particular item.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Any comments? No? Thank you very much, both of you. Dominique Aiello and Dave Wiley, and then on deck will be Rob Bigno and Danielle Moser. Please start. Whoever wants to start first. Yes.
Go ahead. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Dominic Aiello. I'm the president of the Oregon Outdoor Council. representing the interests of about 13,000 of our subscribers. The Oregon Outdoor Council supports ODFW funding in full and requests just a couple items be returned if possible, specifically funding for predator management. And we do have concerns over a track record of broken commitments that I'd like to discuss. But before I get to that, as the committee is aware, hunters and anglers in Oregon across the country shoulder a large burden for funding conservation and wildlife management. Additionally, in Oregon, we make a $1.6 billion economic ripple effect annually. However, over the past 30 years in Oregon, we've seen an exponentially increase in costs for Oregonians to enjoy our lifestyle and provide their families, friends, and neighbors with organic free-range protein. And so while those costs have been increasing to do those we've been seeing a decline in the resource. ODFW reports that since the late 1970s, we've seen about a 33% decline in our deer population in the state. And during that time, we've also seen a large increase in predator populations, largely the cougar, bears, wolves. And so while hunters and anglers are paying to go ahead and utilize the resource, we're continually losing a portion of that take. So as a result, we're seeing a growing frustration within the community, and we see that some of that is justified and have to point some of that towards the agency itself, because they do have a track record, as I said, of some failed commitments. And a couple of those that I'd like to bring up: during the 2015 legislative session, there was a bill passed that ODFW would do a predator impact study to see the impacts that the growing population of predators in Oregon is having on our ungulate and fish populations, and that has not been done. We also had a commitment that they would increase administrative removal of cougars in high-density areas in the state, and that has also been failed to have been met. And then we also have, as Bob Reese brought up earlier, the failed commitment on the Columbia River endorsement policy. So while we support this budget, we are extremely hesitant in doing so, and will be continually hesitant in the future if this track record continues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wiley.
Thank you, sir. Co-chairs Frederick and Witt, my name is Dave Wiley, and I'm representing the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation here. The Elk Foundation is a national nonprofit wildlife conservation organization, and our mission is to ensure the future of elk, all other wildlife, their habitat, and our hunting heritage. We've got more than 16,000 members in the state and 220,000 nationwide. Over the past 30-some-odd years, we have installed or participated in the protection and enhancement of 787,000 acres of wildlife habitat. We work with ODF&W on an ongoing basis on many issues, both political and, I guess you could say, and on the ground. The foundation supports the ODF&W budget, and particularly the Wildlife Management Division's budget, with two exceptions of note. The first is we'd like to see the funding for the predator management program restored. It's somewhere around $400,000. The other program that we'd like to see restored is the volunteer program. And it seems to us that it's rather counterproductive to cut something less than $100,000 out of the budget that manages and organizes the volunteers for the department, who provide many thousands and thousands of hours of service and expertise that would otherwise not be available. Restoring that general fund money would be very appropriate, we believe. We also want to point out that the sage-grouse program is very important to the economy as well as to the animals. And we support the budget note that's been proposed by OHA regarding poaching. And finally, we'd like to see the wolf management program fully funded. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No? Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Bob Bignall, and Robert Bignall, and Danielle Moser. And up next would be Liz Hamilton and Dave Moskowitz. I saw Dave outside there. Please, go ahead.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, and members of the committee. My name is Rob Bignall, fishing guide in Sherwood, Oregon. I'm representing the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association. My testimony today is based on previous ODF&W commission meetings that were controversial of the commercial fishermen's use of gillnets, and that continues. Senate Bill 830 was established to phase out gillnets on the main stem of the Columbia River. With the lack of support given by the commission and their disregard of ODF&W staff's recommendations, we regressed from the proposals of Senate Bill 830. So an observation, the pie chart represented by ODF&W staff on Monday, there are 680,000 angler license holders, of which 9,800 are purchased the Columbia River endorsement. And I cannot connect the dots in thinking there's 88% credibility of ODF&W and a 95% confidence level between sportsmen and the department. Because your stated pool of 900 Oregonians appears not to be very representative of a sport community that pays the bills for ODF&W. And overall, this is not a warm and fuzzy story. The financial status of this department on recreational sportsmen, where 66% are anglers and 33% are hunters, and really have little to show for it other than your hand in our back pocket sustaining this department. The recreational community contributes $2.5 billion annually to the Oregon's economy. ODF&W Commission has damaged the relationship between ODF&W and the recreational sportsmen. They have created a division between Oregon and Washington that has a time-honored 100-year-old compact and a shared management that affects hundreds of thousands of families that are dependent upon the sales relating to fishing. This is over not following the policies ratified by our legislator under Senate Bill 830. Commercial fishing takes 2.5 times more fish as the recreational, and they only contribute to 4% of the ODF&W budget. Under a business side of priority, this would never fly, where 4% of ODF&W budget is controlled by 148 commercial permit holders that average less than $23,000 per year, and 70 of those make less than $10,000 per year. And 50% of ODF&W's budget is made up of 680,000 recreational fishermen with 2.5 times less fish. On another note, I have great respect for what you do as elected or volunteer officials when you have the word senator, representative, director, or commissioner attached to your name. But what went on last commission meeting on September 17th was way out of line. I watched commission panel being run by two of its members browbeat the other members into submission for unanimous vote taking Senate Bill 830 backwards. Then I watched commission member Holly Akinson belittle, chastise, and degrade the ODF&W staff and legislature in front of a total gallery over the requested projection of financial values for reduced agency funding that was approved by Fisheries Director Ed Bowles and ODFW Director Melcher. So in conclusion, where is all the warm and fuzzy support for ODF&W? Because the disproportional membership of our commission, or what I call gillnet lobbyists, goals are in support of a commercial industry that takes 50% of the salmon resources, participating only in 4% of ODF&W's budget. If we continue down this path, ODF&W's financial status will continue to be in trouble. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bignall. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Danielle Moser.
Chairman Frederick, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. My name is Danielle Moser, and I am the Wildlife Coordinator for Oregon Wild. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. And I'm going to, in the interest of brevity, I'm going to cut my testimony down as you have the have it in written format. So apologies if it's a bit choppy. So Oregon Wild represents nearly 20,000 Oregonians across the state who value protecting and enhancing all fish and wildlife for enjoyment, recreation, and conservation benefit. Our members include hikers, wildlife photographers, bird watchers, anglers, and hunters, all who believe that a healthy ecosystem full of abundant fish, thriving native wildlife populations, and biologically diverse habitat is critical to ensuring our natural heritage. We recognize and believe ODFW's work is vital to all Oregonians who value fish and wildlife conservation. In particular, their instrumental role in returning bighorn sheep to the landscape and their collaboration with the Oregon Zoo and their captive breeding program to foster the recovery of the western pond turtle are just a couple examples of how, when adequately staffed, supported, and funded, we can turn broad public values into actionable solutions for Oregon's fish and wildlife. However, as the agency is currently funded and structured, vital programs to protect and restore non-game species of fish and wildlife are woefully underfunded and understaffed. As my colleague said earlier, there was a report that said ODFW staff responsible for conserving Oregon's 600 species of non-game wildlife, or roughly 88% of the overall species in the state, receive about 2% of the department's total budget. And while we support some of the proposed cuts to wasteful programs, such as the $470,000 to Wildlife Services Animal Trapping and Poisoning Program, we fear cuts in non-game species conservation, basic science, and water quality protection, which will further erode Oregon's ability to protect our fish and wildlife. Hunters and anglers are rightfully concerned about how license and fee dollars are allocated. Similarly, non-hunting and fishing Oregonians, who make up about 90% of the state's population, are similarly concerned about where and how their tax dollars are spent. As a general principle, Oregon Wild believes general fund allocations to ODFW should go towards programs that benefit Oregonians broadly. Addressing ODFW budget challenges and funding for conservation programs can't be done in a vacuum. Historically, ODFW and the Fish and Wildlife Commission have placed a larger emphasis on consumptive programs, but it's imperative for the longevity of the agency and their ability to expand programs that they represent and reflect the broad public values. In particular, relating to the governor's recommended budget, we oppose Prop 145, which would cut funding for the Oregon Conservation Strategy. This is ODFW's primary non-game species conservation program, and its current funding levels are already wholly inadequate to meet the needs of Oregon. Further cuts to the program would be a giant step backwards. We support full funding for POP 108, which ensures water quality and quantity for our fish and wildlife, and we strongly support the portion of the budget that eliminates $470,000 in funding for wildlife services. Oregonians aspire to have a fish and wildlife agency which seeks to proactively protect and restore native fish and wildlife before becoming endangered, assist landowners who want to provide and protect necessary wildlife habitat throughout the state, and inspire and encourage the next generation of Oregonians to connect to nature through non-consumptive means like hiking, bird watching, and photography. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I'm calling forward Liz Hamilton and Dave Moskowitz. And then after them, Scott Beckstad and Jack Dempsey.
Co-chairs Frederick and Rick Witt, members of the committee, it's an honor to be here and testify in front of you today on behalf of ODFW's budget. For the record, I'm Liz Hamilton, and I have the honor of serving as the executive director of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. Our industry employs roughly 11,000 people in the state of Oregon and generate about $1 billion in economic benefit throughout the state, mostly in rural areas. Our retailers sell most of those 680-some-thousand licenses as well, so we interact with those customers every day. So you're going to hear a theme. I looked at Director Melcher's slideshow. I wasn't able to be here, and it covered performance standards, key performance standards for the agency, and I love performance standards. I love things that benchmark how we're doing. But the one that caught my eye was a commission performance standard.
And I think you're hearing a lot about that today. Anglers have been paying an additional $9.75 in order to implement the Columbia River reforms, plus this body legislated extra money to go to move gillnets out of the Columbia River and to optimize the economics to the state of Oregon from these fisheries. We have ESA-listed stocks. We've got to do the best we can by those fish, number one, then the economics, number two. But in spite of all the years of collecting funds from anglers and taxpayers, and in spite of the fact that the commercial fleet has more than met, almost double some years, the economic benchmarks that we set for them as a protective safety net, none of what's been promised has been delivered. And in fact, well, no, I shouldn't say none, but the commission has been systematically unraveling this plan. We've watched it unfold over about the last year, year and a half. To make matters worse, as you've heard already, in public meetings, they openly disrespect members of this body. It's on tape. You can watch it. They abuse their staff in ways that we feel is inappropriate in the industry. And they treat citizens from the sport fishing community like hostile witnesses on the stand. As Director Melcher pointed out, the industry excise tax and the license fees that our industry primarily collects fund half of the agency. So why we speak about this today is because this agency needs to be well-funded, and these kind of behaviors put that funding at risk, in our opinion. And in fact, much of the sport fishing community pulled out of their support for House Bill 2402 because they couldn't, in good conscience, move forward with more funding for an agency that is treating them so disrespectfully. Finally, I want to say, most of the sport fisheries are focused on hatchery fish with live release as gently as possible. In some cases, we can't even take them out of the water of wild fish. So I would encourage you to look carefully at the hatchery budget. It sustains fisheries, it sustains jobs in this state, and it sustains a family culture of getting outdoors and getting off the electronics and bonding with each other. And as another person said earlier, it also puts a sustainable and wholesome food on the table that's really unparalleled. So again, I thank you for the opportunity, and I ask that you pay more attention to the management part of this agency, because I think it's going to hurt the budget in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Moskowitz.
Thank you. My name is David Moskowitz. I'm here representing the Conservation Angler, co-chairs Witt and Senator Fredericks, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity here. And for those of us who are interested in fish and wildlife, you know, two days of hearing the agency talk and respond to you, and then 2 hours of testimony, it really doesn't do justice to the people who care about fish and wildlife in this state. And I think that the way the general fund has been yanked around, that reflects kind of the poor treatment of the natural resource agencies across the board, but particularly Fish and Wildlife, who is really between a rock and a hard place. So just want to echo support for this agency. It's, I guess you could say it's a little bit of tough love from their constituents today that I think you've heard. And you are saddled with having to try to fix a whole bunch of problems with not enough money on the plate. And that's going to be really difficult. I think we've heard from many people here urging programs like the Western Streams Restoration Program, the Life Cycle Monitoring, POP 108, which is water resources. You know, these are critical programs. OSP enforcement. We talked a little bit about poaching. There's definitely interest in that, I think, across the board. The fact that those are on the table for cuts really pose a lot of problems, I think, for the future of fish and wildlife in this state. So our organization supports trying to do everything we can to keep those in. And, of course, and we will provide some testimony on some ideas on things that could be swapped for some of those. One of the things, one of the biggest issues, and I think it's interesting to be here with Liz at the table, and we've worked together for a long time, but her closing thoughts were supporting hatchery production. And our opinion is exactly opposite that. And the weight of scientific evidence of the ill effects of hatchery production on wild fish for salmon and steelhead is really unrefutable. And if you don't believe that, you are basically in the same boat as climate science deniers. These are real issues that have been studied for a tremendous long time. The hatchery program has been operated for many years, and yet where are we? I just spent a couple days at the PFMC meetings. That's the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. They had a series of their opening meetings in Vancouver a couple weeks ago. There's going to be no ocean fishing from the Mexican border to Cape Blanco, essentially, Humbug Mountain. And that's because the Sacramento Chinook and the Klamath Chinook are just in terrible shape. And for the California runs, those are largely driven by hatcheries. They're just not working. Fortunately, the Central Oregon coast, with the Fall Chinook, relatively abundant coho, are not going to face those issues. But Southern Oregon is going to feel the pain. In the Columbia River, you have problems with the Tule Fall Chinook. And for steelhead in the Columbia River, there's going to be 33,000 wild steelhead coming up to Bonneville Dam. 33,000 in the entire Columbia and Snake River Basin. For historic reference, before Dvorak Dam, just when Dvorak Dam blocked the North Fork of the Clearwater, there were 63,000 wild B-run steelhead going back to the North Fork Clearwater. This year, the estimate is about 820 wild B-run fish. That's a component of the wild summer steelhead. We're talking about a crisis here, folks. We're talking about something that really should be spawning a disaster declaration from the western states, because the fisheries, and not this is Oregon, California, Washington, are really in difficult shape. If you take away the hatchery fish, some of the wild fish populations are doing fairly well. You know, the upriver brights in the Hanford Reach, sockeye, all that go across eight dams and down up on the Washington-Canadian border. They've increased about 10% every year for 10 years. There's been no fishery on them. There's a very minor hatchery program there. Those are wild fish. We are investing in a technology that is failing us. We think the department has a very difficult mission. If you look at their mission, it's to conserve the native fish in the state. It's also to provide use and enjoyment for present generations and future generations. Okay? So you have three prongs: conservation of the species for present generations and for the future. The agency is pressured by the present. And I'm here today to talk about the future, because I've got two young kids who I've tried to take out on rivers to get them outdoors to enjoy Oregon's natural abundance and beauty. And it's possible that maybe my son or daughter, they're never going to feel the grab of a B-run steelhead in the Deschutes River. That makes me angry. There's many things that cause that. Climate change, the ocean warm water blog, all that. But we have responsibilities and things we can affect here in Oregon waters and on Oregon rivers. And the agency has the mission to protect these species and make sure that they can be used and enjoyed by not just those of us in the room today, but the people who come after us. We're not meeting that. We are not meeting that. And it's the agency with duct tape and bubble gum has held together hatcheries, has made it, you know. I was out with a guy named Wayne Bowers years ago, and our truck broke down in some back road in the Mau here. We're on our way to some meeting. I mean, literally, he's on the back just, you know, fixing the transmission, you know, in the dirt, and we get to the meeting. I mean, this agency has done an incredible job with the money they've been given. They need more money, But they also need leadership, and I think you've heard it loud and clear that there's very few constituencies that feel satisfied, I believe. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and I don't know if we're going to get to be able to resolve those. But we've got to at least acknowledge them. And I think that the fish runs, the state of them, show us that we're not quite meeting them. So, need to wrap it up?
Yeah, please, because we only have a few minutes, and, and I have more people who want to speak. So.
Very good. I appreciate you, the opportunity to go on here. I want to it's hard to say. I'll put it into formal comments, which we'll submit to the...
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And the one thing I'd like to say, though, is that a former Fish and Wildlife fellow and a guy who's written a book called Salmon Without Rivers was very much about how we were producing salmon that didn't have a home. And if we don't resolve this tension between hatchery and wild fish properly in a science-based way that honors the economic contribution of the fishery, and that's why I'm talking about disaster declarations, but we're going to soon have rivers without salmon. That doesn't sound like Oregon to me, and we need to fix that.
Thank you.
There's no sugarcoating it, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm happy to take questions.
Right now, I have two other folks who want to speak, and if I could have them both come up, Scott Beckstead and Jack Dempsey. Let's see. If you'd start, Scott, that'd be helpful.
You bet. Thank you. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director and Rural Outreach Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I was going to spend my 3 minutes really going after USDA Wildlife Service's hammer and tongs, but I do that in my written testimony, so I think I'm going to just abbreviate it and change my tone a little bit. I'm here to register our strong support for eliminating funding for Wildlife Services from the ODFW budget. I think that this is an opportunity to restart the conversation on predators and damage control. And in the past, I have been proud to work collaboratively with all sorts of stakeholders on these issues. Representative Witt was a master at creating some coalitions that ultimately led, I think, to the passage of House Bill 4046, which is Representative Helm also on that set some meaningful strengthening of poaching laws. You know, I look at guys like Joe Rollator and Stan Steele and Al Elkins, and those guys are my opponents, but they're also my friends. And we've worked collaboratively on things before. I feel that we can do it again. I understand there's going to be some disagreements, but I strongly believe that we cannot trust USDA Wildlife Services. We can't trust them not to put our pets and our protected wildlife at risk, the public at risk. We can't trust them to tell the truth about their means and their methods. And I think that there's a better way forward for Oregon, and I'm more than happy on behalf of my organization and our members here in Oregon to be part of that process. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Jack, please go
Co-chairs,
ahead.
Jack Dempsey on behalf of Waterwatch of Oregon. Waterwatch is a river conservation group dedicated to the protection and restoration of natural flows in Oregon's rivers. In the world of water, ODFNW's work is critical to ensuring the public's interest in Oregon's rivers and streams is protected in state permitting of new water rights, permitting new storage reservoirs, and virtually all allocation and reallocation decisions. ODFNW also works to restore and protect flows through its work to establish in-stream water rights. ODFNW also plays a key role in the larger water policy forums, such as the Willamette Storage Reauthorization, the Deschutes Groundwater Mitigation Program, and endless other task forces, work groups, and rulemakings that touch on water allocation and reallocation. We cannot stress enough the importance of ODFNW's work to protect Oregon's rivers and streams for the public at large. Want to testify for full funding of Policy Option Package 108. That was included in the agency's recommended budget. It was reduced in the governor's recommended budget, and we would request that you add back those two positions. We don't believe any cuts to the water quantity and quality program should be made at this time. Its work is critical to keeping water in Oregon's rivers and making sure that water development projects move forward in a way that does not harm Oregon's fish and wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you, Bert. Thank you all. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate the testimony. And we will have the department speaking or continuing their presentation tomorrow at 1:20. Yes, Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, for a number of years now, there's a checkoff on state income tax for ODFW, and I'd like to find out from the department how much money has been collected, how does that go from one year to the next, and what's it used for.
I see people writing down notes right now. I have a feeling we'll get that kind of information tomorrow. So I'm going to close this hearing right now on House Bill 5010, and we will be reopening it tomorrow at 1:20, and I'll close the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. 1:20, because you folks went over. I had to close down the hearing yesterday and give the announcement for 48 hours.
So
wait a minute.
It wasn't me. I didn't speak.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. I saw you there. So thank you. I'm closing down the hearing.
Can't blame.
So thank you. I'm closing down the hearing.